And the Colorado Rockies have not only swept a doubleheader, they have swept a three-game series from the New York Mets, who today in 18 innings managed only one run. They score four runs in three games against the Colorado Rockies. And, you know, with an off day tomorrow, you just have to wonder if some kind of move is coming, because there's just nothing happening here right now for the New York Mets. They have been swept by the Rockies today and in the series and dropped to 10 games under the 500 mark at 9-19.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, April the 27th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this off day edition. Coming to you a little later than normal. Apologize for that. Have a little spring cold, and last night, I know what you're probably saying, you know, one run in 18 doubleheader innings and, what, four runs the entire series probably made Mike sick and he bounced on us. No, a little voice issue, you might still hear it a little nasally here this morning as I come to you, and quite honestly, it was also a good time for me to think about where the Mets are at. And, you know, you all know we have the getting to know you phase, and I always say, hey, give it to Memorial Day, give it, you know, a couple of more weeks, give it till the end of May till we really make an assertion. But, and you heard it coming in, you heard the words of Howie Rose here. It kind of is getting late early, and it's kind of hard after particularly this weekend to see how things are going to get better around here with this club, with this team. And, you know, although I'm not ready to wave the white flag on the season, and the last time I did this, I've said this time and time and time again in 2024, we all know what happened. Maybe I could bring some mojo to the club. I think there's a big difference right now. Look, when you just objectively take a look at the lineup, and even though the starting pitching's not perfect, you have issues on the back end with Senga and Peterson, and the bullpen with Williams and Weaver is still a little iffy, although you have some really interesting arms. You know, Warren, I think, is an interesting arm. We'll see if he sticks around after the doubleheader. You know, Brazenban has seemed to find himself a little bit. Tobias Myers is a nice piece. Brooks Raley, since he returned after his elbow surgery, has been really, really good. I mean, the bullpen's interesting. I mean, the pitching isn't bad. I mean, it's not perfect. It isn't bad. And after what happened in the second half of last year, geez, if you threw this Mets staff into the second half of last year, you might have had a different outcome at the end of 2025. But up and down the lineup, taking away Soto and Alvarez, it is unconscionable to look at the OPSs here on April the 27th. We're not talking about week one of the season. On April the 27th, Vientos is at 637, Simeon 575, Bichette 570, Benj 529, Luis Robert Jr. 656, Brett Beatty 579, Tyrone Taylor 614, Luis Torrens 519, Tommy Pham, who just got designated zero, didn't get a hit, struck out in half of his at-bats, Ronnie Mauricio back from AAA 571, a bunch of OPSs in the 5 and 600s. And what, a third of the Mets games, they've scored one or zero runs this year, which is amazing to think about. You're at a point where, is this a team-wide slump, or is this a lineup full of 4A players? And even Alvarez, who's been okay, And for a catcher, 116 OPS plus, 760 OPS, some pop, walking a little bit, you know, more than normal, finally seems to be coming to his own at age 24. And that's what I have to keep reminding myself as I've been tough on Alvarez. He's age 24. You know, you start to look at that. You start to wonder if, even in rebuilding years with Washington, when Soto was there, will he get anything to hit all year? You know, I can't see it. I mean, yesterday in a big spot with Luis Robert Jr. up on deck, they clearly pitched around him. I mean, Soto's not going to get anything to hit. And you have to wonder, I mean, could this be an historically strange statistical year for Soto where he walks a ton, he doesn't get much to hit, probably going to have power numbers that are down. And if he does, you know, when he does get something to hit, he hits a home run, it's probably going to be with nobody on base. So you may have an odd statistical season for Soto. So I think it's fair to say at this point that this is not a very good team. Now, I don't want to put an official declaration on the season, but a week ago I said, look, really crazy losing streaks, and you were at a point where teams start to have things just happen to them. When that loss in Chicago last Sunday, the hanging changeup by Williams to Conforto, just this is the kind of stuff that happens when a team is in a bad slump. And you say, all right, they're coming home, they're facing, in theory, because the Mets are the weak team in the league, but in theory, going into the season, some of the weaker teams in the league in Minnesota and Colorado and D.C. go off, have a big homestand, and you know, go something like 7-2. I mean, people were talking about, hey, if they could go on and just have a 9-0 homestand, 8-1, 7-2, and you know, get yourself back into striking distance of 500, stabilize, cauterize the wound, and move forward before you go on your next West Coast swing to Anaheim. And there was a little bit of hope after the Minnesota series, but they won a crazy ball game on Thursday, a game that should have been clean and easy that they had to scrape out with a big Bo Bichette late inning hit. And they had to barely squeak past the second game of that series. I mean, in fairness, they could easily be 0-6 on this homestand and be facing an 18-game losing streak. I mean, it's not, there's a couple of things that don't go their way. A dunker by Vientos, the Bichette big hit. They'd be on a serious losing streak, a historic losing streak. Historic. I mean, you couldn't put together a tanking team that could lose 18 in a row. It's hard to do. Hard to do. So, although I'm not ready to say it's over, it ain't looking good, and I'm not so sure that I could honestly assess that this is going to get better. But here's where there might be an opportunity in the crisis. Because you can't just sit back and say, this team stinks, I hate this team, fire the manager, fire the president of baseball operations. All Cohen does is care about the casino. You can't just sit back and make that your season. You can't sit back and make this season about hate. About hate for the organization, hate of the position you're in, hate on everything that's going on. Right now, the big story to me is, and what I said is, yes, Bichette getting off to a rough start, that's not crazy. Polanco hurt coming out of the gate, not a crazy scenario. Really bad luck what happened to Lindor. Second calf injury, I think there's been some epidemic a little bit with the calf injuries around the league, so it's a little interesting. You know, Soto right now, how can you assess him? He got hurt, he started out. He is who he is. I don't think he's, you know, going anywhere here where you're going to see a different version of Soto other than he's going to be in a naked lineup. Outside of Alvarez, who is starting to show a little bit of big league-itis, let's say, you know? When I say big league, like he's a big leaguer. That's what I mean by that. Every other positional prospect looks to be a bust. Vientos, Beatty, Mauricio. Benj is coming around, but I mean, he's hitting a buck 79 now? 529 OPS. I mean, he's heading in the right direction. And I'm not ready to give up on Benj. You know, a lot of ways Benj is going to get looped in with these guys. He shouldn't. But how could you have built this team? Not brought back. And I'm okay with how not bringing back. You didn't bring back Nimmo. You didn't bring back, you don't keep McNeil. You didn't keep up, you don't bring back Pete. You didn't keep Nimmo, the old offensive guard, which, let's face it, Right now, outside of Nimmo, I'm not so sure it'd be much different. Maybe a little bit better. And it'd be familiar. We'd be having a very similar conversation, I feel. To be frank, I think that's the dirty little secret. Everybody says they want the old guys back. We'd be having a very similar conversation. Maybe a couple of games better. You had to come into this season where there were reasonable hope that a Brett Beatty would have a 780-800 OPS and would be emerging as a component offensive threat. Vientos, despite all his warts, could still give you 20 to 25 home runs. I mean, it was basically the same season last year, with the exception of about 10 or 11 less home runs when you look at Vientos 2025 versus the OMG summer. We wrote about this over at Beyond the Mic, over at Extra Innings. We wrote about this. We talked about this. And look, Mauricio, you weren't sure about, but he had some moments last year. To sit here before May 1st and all three of these guys look like they are probably not big leaguers. And the fact that you're relying on MJ Melendez, Tommy Pham, now Austin Slater is coming in. These true trash or treasure signings that, let's face it, they're great to have conversations in December when there's no baseball. But other than subbing in or maybe some kind of like lottery ticket that you find, the fact that we've been talking about a number of these trash or treasures. I mean, look, Carl Edwards Jr., a trash or treasure conversation from the winter. Big innings yesterday. Not Kodai Senga, the guy that you're expecting big stuff from. Big innings. I mean, when Stearns is building this team, you're not really factoring that in to the equation that these three guys might not be big leaguers. That Kodai Senga might not be a big leaguer. That David Peterson, on a walk year nonetheless, is as bad as what you used to see early in his career. And that Devin Williams has lost his mechanics. I mean, you want to talk about New York-itis, or you want the bad New York-itis, not the good one where the big league-itis. Big league-itis, it's actually a negative term, I shouldn't say. But Alvarez looked like a big leaguer. Williams has New York-itis, right? Here we are, the second closer coming over here and having mechanical issue. What's up with that? I mean, these are crazy, crazy things to think about. And Sean Manaea, who was so big and critical to the summer of OMG, who was, morphed himself into an interesting long reliever that almost reminds me of the late Pedro Feliciano. What's ironic about the Mets' bullpen is they can actually survive a little bit of short starts because they've got a Tobias Myers, a Sean Manaea, and even to a certain degree, Austin Warren now, quality arms that can give you 2 to 3 innings. So you don't have to do a one inning here from this guy, one inning, and then be shuttling guys over and over again. If you want to talk about a small light at the end of the tunnel, a very dim light, mind you. But now here's the opportunity. And it's something that we've talked about, and I think it's been the elephant in the room for a long, long time. A lot longer than you think. Expectations are getting lower every day. Not just win probability, but with the fan base. I think after this weekend, the fan base, a good chunk of them are probably just giving, when there's a point in the season where you fall out of love, where you give it away, where it doesn't hurt anymore, where you're past the point of exacerbation. You're just like, hey, this is not happening. The losses don't hurt. You still get angry and frustrated and shake your head, but they don't hurt anymore because you're numb from the losing. There might be part of the fan base that here on April 27th is at that point already. There is a chunk of the fan base that hates the manager, hates the president of baseball operations, probably pissed off at Cohen. I don't know how the guy's done everything financially, you ask. You aren't that far away from having a lost season. And I just told you why. I mean, there's nothing about this club that looks like it's going to turn around. I mean, let's just do some simple Mets math here. They're 9-19. They would have to go 79-55 to win about 88 games. I don't see how you go from this, from all those OPSs, from the closer not having his mechanics, a top 10 positional player in the sport in Lindor out possibly till the All-Star break. That's nearly a 600 winning percentage. That's a 94-95 win pace. This club has not even done that. I mean, they did it for maybe a small stint on a half of a year and a half of a year after the OMG summer. But it's been a long time. I mean, June of 2025 is a long time ago. OMG summer is a long time ago. I just don't see if they're going to be able to do that. And that's at least the bare minimum to be somewhere in a contender situation. And I understand there are those of you who just say just 2 years ago, 11 under to the National League Championship Series. Those are very, very rare situations. Very rare. Very rare. You put those in a bottle and you remember those seasons because they don't come around a lot. But here's your opportunity. You, because there's that emotional giveaway, because at this point, you're probably not going to be able to make any kind of move that's going to win the fan base over. With the status of your young players here, the ones that are on the roster, they're here. Like, either they're good or they're not. Right now, they don't look like they're good. Like, there's no replacing them. There's no sense in sending these guys who are going to go down to AAA and dominate the International League. Is that going to prove anything? No, they have to do it here. One of your top 10 positional players in the league, he's out for a while. Polanco's a core bat now, injured, and with lower body issues, like with the Achilles and now with a hand issue, these are not good injuries for an offensive player. You're getting guys like Pham and Melendez getting at-bats, Austin Slater now. Look, you're asking Luis Robert Jr., who's trying to revive his career, to protect Juan Soto in a big spot in the middle of the order. That's unfair. But you're expecting him to produce like he did a few years ago. You wouldn't have gotten him for Luis Angel Acuña if he was close to that. All right, Benj, let him take his big league lumps. Learn on the job. Another guy. I'm sure he'll go down to AAA unless you think there's something he needs to work on or that the failure at the big league level will ruin him indefinitely. Just let him take his lumps. And at this point, just play it out with Beatty, Mauricio Alvarez. Make sure Mauricio gets as much time as you can. Got to tell you, Beatty looks great at third base, though. You got to give him credit. Defensively, looks really good at third base. Can't hit, but looks good at third base. Ride him out. You got to ride him out. You could play this thing out. And you could finally do what you might not have done since the days of Nelson Doubleday and Frank Cashin. Maybe do a small rebuild. I talked about this. And you'd have the cover. Stearns would have the cover. Cohen would have the cover. They still have to hear it. They still have to hear it about how can you have this kind of payroll and be rebuilding. How can you be this bad? But don't make any drastic moves. Give the kids their time. Don't DFA them. At the very least, if you feel like it's getting this bad, try to find some kind of BS trade that you can make for Vientos and everything. They're not going to learn down in Syracuse. I don't need to see 4A vets. Austin Slater's not saving the season. The Tommy Pham, MJ Melendez types are not saving the season. They're just trying to get their careers on track to figure out how they could have their second act. Start to incorporate young players little by little. You did it with Scott the other day. I know it was a bad outing. Doesn't mean you have to go back and give up on him. Maybe he needs a little bit of time. Maybe he was nervous. And he walked the ballpark. Possibly, I know he's hot. I think his swing and miss rate is problematic, but maybe at some point you get Ryan Clifford up here. Maybe you get Hayden Senger some at-bats. I mean, eventually, you're probably, as being a free agent, you might want to trade Torrens. Maybe Senger, if you ever want to think about Alvarez being an offensive piece on a more consistent basis, maybe Senger becomes more of a behind-the-plate option. He seems to have some pop now. But at the very least, he's your backup catcher of the future. Who knows, Weninger, Tong, and at some point, they start to get starts later in the year. Look, Holmes and Peralta, and I mean, with McClain, is a really good top three. It's not bad. I think Holmes, and it's a shame because Holmes is a guy, is a veteran that you'd like to have in a rotation with some young players. Peralta, I mean, we've talked about it at this point. I don't see how you keep him around past the, if this thing doesn't turn around. But you go out and you try to find out what you can get for them. You could always bring Holmes back as a free agent if you want. I mean, you could bring maybe Peralta back as a free agent if you want. It's possible. Bullpen arms. I know that, you know, it hasn't been a good start of the season for Lambert, and Dylan Ross has been hurt, and Jonathan Pintar is the only one that's doing anything down in the minors, but maybe you start to incorporate some of these young arms. Do you have young arms to incorporate into that bullpen? And the real wild card in all this is A.J. Ewing. Do you just keep him down in AAA? And because he's going to get a promotion the way he's playing in Binghamton, and he becomes an option for 2027? Or does he, is he brought up here to produce some energy? See, I don't want him to come up here, get service time, just to be a drawing card for the fans. And look, you still have other arms down in AA. You know, Santucci, Zach Thornton, Will Watson. That's what's going to be the make or break for this club. You could start to incorporate these young players. You could use your veteran, whatever veteran capital you have, to bring in some young talent. Could you trade Peralta and get back a top positional player and maybe an arm, or, you know, at the very least, a top positional player at the deadline? Get back something that you gave up. We'll see. Can Holmes, I mean, with the state of pitching, these guys could get you with the right organization, with the right prospect. You might be able to bring back some positional talent. That should be your goal on any trade. You seem to have the pitching down, Pat. Do you have the positional talent? None of the trades they've made even, I mean, it wasn't Stearns, but Clifford and Gilbert and Acuna. I mean, the Mets last time they did this, and granted, they were trading 40-year-old former aces. None of them panned out. I mean, we'll see about Clifford. You have the cover now to do this. You didn't do it after the worst team money could buy. And by the way, there is absolutely no correlation between this team and the worst team money can buy, other than a top payroll. That book, for those who, people who talk about it, haven't even read it. I've read it multiple times, and I lived it. That book was as much about the kind of character you had in that clubhouse and the craziness off the field and why the franchise did not win more after 86 and how it, the decisions that went into post-86 affected the franchise more than anything else. There's no correlation between the two. None. And if you have the kind of bad characters that you have in this clubhouse back then you don't want to bring any of these young players in because it impacts them. Because I believe it impacted a Jeff Kent and a Ryan Thompson and the few young players that were incorporated into that club later in the year when they fell out of the race. So I don't want to get into that deeply, but no correlation at all at this point. You didn't do it then. You didn't do it after the Piazza years. You didn't do it that summer of 2004. They traded Kazmir away and tried to make the playoffs. Then Omar came in, and we all know what happened. And Sandy Alderson came in purgatory, and they held on to Wright and Reyes, and they basically stayed in this weird 75 to 77 win range waiting for a better day. And it happened briefly, but set them back. And then when you developed all those pitchers, and I'm raised my hand as guilty as the next person, nobody was cool about trading DeGrom too early or Harvey too early or Syndergaard too early or Matz too early. Just kept trying to fit it around it because, hey, you know, Wheeler's coming back. You never have the opportunity like you have with these pitchers. I mean, for a good 5 years, pitching was never a problem for the Mets. They didn't have to go on the free agent market for starters. They had it, and it was cost controlled. And they blew that opportunity. And part of what you see now, and I talked about it last week, is that the draft and the development has been bad. Now, Stearns is now 2 years into that. We really can't evaluate him. I'm not going to evaluate him on bench, but he has some cover now. Ride it out. Play this out. Start to incorporate the young players. Don't send Benj down. You know, another opportunity for Scott, put him back in the rotation. There is no reason to get 4A pitchers, 4A hitters to try to save this thing. I don't know if it's savable. If you're going to lose, lose with the homegrown talent. Unless you think it'll be exposed and you can't trade it, lose with the homegrown talent. At this point, you have no value for Beatty, Mauricio, and Vientos. You might as well ride it out with them. It might go down as an historic trio of failed positional prospects. And who knows? Maybe when the season's over, they're halfway decent, and then you could even maybe potentially move on from them reasonably if they go on a hot streak. Vientos is the kind of guy for 8 weeks could go on a hot streak and hit home run after home run after home run. That's where you're at. Now, let's take a quick break. There could be one other wild card component to all this. I've talked about how the manager doesn't matter, and when you start to go up and down the 30 rosters in the league, managers are kind of interchangeable. You don't have Davey Johnsons anymore, Lou Piniellas, Billy Martin, Jimmy Leland types. You just don't have those guys anymore. I mean, it's becoming less and less common. You have a few good managers, but they're part of a system and a ball club and a relationship with the president of baseball operations or a GM, and they're nondescript. And I think managing in this town, because of the stakeholders, which are the fans and the media, is harder than ever. And I think that when we take a quick break and come back, the Mets might have been given a gift by the Red Sox. And I know there's going to be some debate on that, and I'm not saying that it's something that could happen right away, but Alex Cora could be a piece to all this and help with a quicker rebuild. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back, and if you're living under a rock, you didn't hear the big news this weekend where after a 17-1 win, Craig Breslow and the Red Sox decided to part ways with their coaching staff and Alex Cora, and a lot of controversy up in Boston. And one of the things, if you followed me on X, I pointed out is that since the Theo Epstein years and Terry Francona, when they parted ways after the chicken and beer collapse of 2011, they've had some success, the Red Sox, a couple of World Series, but they haven't had consistency. Now, you'll take, I guess, the couple of World Series they've had since the Francona, Epstein years, and that inconsistency versus what the Mets have had over a similar period. But it goes to show you when you're constantly changing, and some of that was the, you know, with the manager was the whole sign stealing thing. When you're constantly changing front offices, you get yourself in a bind, and that's where the Mets are at. We've talked about it over and over and over again. Now, I talked about the manager, and it looks like from reports, Jim Duquette is reporting that Mendoza's job is not on the line, and they're not even close to replacing the manager. And honestly, look, I just read off earlier in the program all those OPSs. There is absolutely nothing Carlos Mendoza can do with that lineup. There is no magic trick. There is no yelling it into them. You're hopeless. You're powerless. Look, the only thing you could do is pick the lineup out of a hat like Billy Martin did and say, let's have some fun with this. You want to say maybe put Soto in the leadoff spot, put Bichette behind him so there's a better protection than Luis Robert Jr. or Marcus Semien? I mean, let's call it like it is. You're asking guys in that lineup like Marcus Semien, Luis Robert Jr., and to a certain degree Mark Vientos, who are bottom-of-the-order hitters that are meant to lengthen the lineup, to be core pieces and protect Soto. Absurd. Bo Bichette came in here expecting to kind of work his way in behind veterans like Lindor and Soto. Injuries have put him front and center, and he's feeling the pressure, I think, of that $40 million contract. Unless he's hurt, unless the knee is still a problem. He's a guy that was playing in big games for the Blue Jays just a few months ago in the World Series. It's not like he's never had the bright lights shown upon him. But here's the thing about Alex Cora. The manager can't change things here, but I think that the environment is such where you might need a manager that could provide some hope and some cover so that Stearns and Cohen could do their thing. More so Stearns could do things his way, more so now than ever. See, I never thought he should have fired Buck. I thought Buck would have been a perfect manager for him. As he came in, he was familiar with the players, he had success. He managed the media. He managed the bullpen well. And I always say it. I've talked about it all the time. A manager's only thing in game that is their only X's and O's that you could really evaluate them on is the bullpen management. The lineup, the hit and run, the substitute. It's so minimally impactful. I mean, in-game management, you want to talk about the intentional walk that they didn't do with Nico Hoehner a week ago. I mean, yeah, maybe, but again, these are all debatable things. They could go one way or the other. Baseball is not like the NBA. It's not football. It's not an X's and O's sport, per se. So it's the bullpen. And then at that point, it's managing up to the front office. It's managing the media. It's doing all those things. That's your, you know, keeping a clean clubhouse. Cora clearly has the respect from his team because they weren't happy. I've heard some mixed reviews on his bullpen management, but what fan base is ever happy with any of their manager's bullpen moves? And I know that, I mean, by evidence by him being fired, there's been some talk about him getting prickly with the front office, but let's face it, Craig Breslow has been a, you know, bit of a stick of dynamite as an executive on multiple fronts. I mean, he won a championship with Dombrowski, and Dombrowski was out a year later. But he won a championship with Dombrowski. A lot of this could be the politics of the Boston environment than anything. I mean, what you'd be getting is, and you bring in a guy like Cora, and let's face it, it's complicated. He's got a contract through next year for a lot of money. So I'm not saying they do it today. I think that might be the end of the season move. That last year, that contract in 27 shouldn't be any reason why the Mets can't make it lucrative enough to get him out of that and make it worth his while. You would bring in somebody that has a winning pedigree, that has some fire, that I think would provide some cover for the organization. And who knows? Maybe he's experienced enough to do what Mendoza can't do, which is, you know, make a chicken salad out of you-know-what here. Because if you start to look at this roster, if they're as bad, these positional players, as we think they are, I mean, you could make some improvements this offseason, but you can't build an entire lineup. Mets pretty much need to build four or five pieces in a lineup. That you can't just do that through free agency. Now, maybe Ewing and Benj become part of that, and maybe there's some other pieces that we're not talking about right now. But you bring someone like Cora in, you know, maybe you have something there. You also get a lot of credibility. You also have to think about, at this point, if this goes sour, free agents and players are going to start to say, do I really want to come here? And Cora is one of the few managers out there available left in this game today that has that kind of gravitas and that kind of resume and cachet. And I think he's polished it. You know, the Boston media is not easy. He could come here and manage the media. What Buck did so well is he entertained during those pre and post games where he deflected a lot. Now, they had a 100-win season his first year, but the second year didn't go well, and it didn't get ugly, and it didn't get laugh-out-loud Mets on him because he was able to kind of work through it. Big criticism was Buck was his handling of young players. Maybe he saw they weren't that good. So I think Cora could be a key piece to Stearns getting some breathing room here because it's the walls are going to start to cave in. If you even do a mini rebuild, a bad rest of the season, and it looks like it's going to be like that, is going to be a constant rattling against Stearns. Look, you could throw Mendoza to the wolves at any time. That'll only satisfy the fans and the media very short period of time. And who are you going to bring in? Let's face it, Kai Correa. New York, unfortunately, and I hate to say we're here at this point, New York is a situation that requires a certain person that can handle the stupid stakeholder stuff, which is the media and the fans, which really, in a vacuum, shouldn't matter. But they do here. And you got to be able to give the fans and the media something to chew on. And Mendoza's not going to be able to do that. He's too flat. And I don't think that has anything to do why the team wins or loses, by the way. That just makes you unhappy because you don't like how he manages you. You don't like how he gives bad quotes to the media. And he does. I mean, look, I don't know what you want him to say. The at-bats are good. Look, you could have a good at-bat making out. He's not wrong. That's baseball 101. You know, they want him to yell and scream like Terry Collins. Look, say what you want. I don't like Terry Collins. I thought he was an awful manager. But he handled the media well. He was a good showman for the fans. Now, I don't think that's what Alex Cora is, but I think Alex Cora could provide hope. I think Alex Cora could be the kind of guy that could come here and maybe turn things around. You know, I would say this. It reminds me a little bit of how they brought Bobby Valentine in at the end of 96 and how the Mets started to turn things around pretty quickly. I mean, Bobby was a lightning rod of a choice. Now, he was managing in AAA, and he had just come back from his first stint to Japan when they did that. I mean, think about it. Think about today, an experienced manager like Bobby Valentine going down to manage it. He was managing Norfolk. and Dallas Green was the manager. I mean, think about that as waiting in the wings. And, I mean, maybe even, and I don't think this would happen, if they start to really get ugly and you want to start to reboot the thing early, bring the guy in late, you know, right after the deadline and let him see what he's got here. I doubt they would do that. I don't think the contract should be a problem. And he's going to have another job. I mean, there's speculation. I see Buster Olney speculating that the Phillies would maybe bring him in because of the relationship with Dombrowski. I mean, after I heard how great Rob Thompson is, even in Philadelphia, things go sour. I mean, who knows if things go bad with the Yankees and Aaron Boone becomes a conversation. I mean, he'll have his choice. Now, does his relationship with Beltran give the Mets a leg up? I don't know. I don't know. It's something to think about. I'm not saying he's going to come in like a Bill Parcells or a Pat Riley or even do what Buck did. Buck came in and things got good really quick. But I think he could be I think he's a good manager. I think he can be the kind of guy that lights a fire in this organization that's probably going to need it. Might be good for the young players. If you don't think he's going to hold players accountable, he's definitely going to hold players accountable. I mean, there's been some that have compared him to, you know, maybe like a Bruce Boche type. You know, maybe even Terry Francona. And again, I'm not around him enough to, I'm going by secondhand information here. But, you know, I think at this point, Stearns is going to need, if Stearns thinks putting in another nondescript numbers, you know, extension of the front office manager is going to help him, and maybe he doesn't care about how it helps him with the fan base. That's very possible. Clearly, he doesn't care about the fans because he hasn't ever made any moves that they really want. The only reason they got Pete Alonso after 24 is because he fell back in their lap. And if there was ever a time that was a no-brainer, Pete was at least debatable after 25. It was a no-brainer after that home run. It was then. So, you know, that's my thought. That would be in terms of the next step. I really think Alex Cora is someone they should consider. And I'm going to be on this all summer. I think this is, and I mean, I don't think it'll happen now. And I don't think you bring him in to save the season now. And I don't think he would even take the job if Mendoza got chopped, because I don't think that would make him feel good. Like, he wouldn't come in and basically take the job tomorrow. I think he would, you know, Mendoza would have to get fired. They would have to have some kind of, like, transition figure, like a Correa. And then maybe in the offseason he would do it. Now, you know, there's always an opportunity at some point. But I think this is more of going into next season. I don't think you're going to see a Cora this year. I think he's just going to take it. I mean, he's getting paid. It's in his best interest to take a step back. All right. Let's wrap up with some mailbags here. Let's see what we got. Sean writes, "Hey, Mike, I wasn't angry last week on the losing streak, but something about this week has got me mad about the team. I had a lot more hope last week that all the excellent pieces we would add up together to a good team. They're clearly not at this point, at least. I'm starting to think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, and the subtractions that were committed in the offseason hurt more than we knew, that the new pieces just aren't adding up. I've never been a Lindor hater, and I still don't think I am, but I'm really wondering, did we subtract the wrong parts? I think this team has proven you can't plug and play RBIs and OPS to a spreadsheet and get results. Have a good week." Sean, it's as simple as this. They thought that they had a certain level of contribution from Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez, Mauricio. And right now, Beatty and Vientos are killing them. And now with Lindor out, if Mauricio is as bad, it's a disaster. There's not a single... I mean, they're going out, Sean, and they're grabbing Austin Slater, MJ Melendez, Tommy Pham, to help them. That's not what wins you championships. Steve Wright writes, what are we watching as fans? I can't remember it being this bad. Even bad teams have games that run into runs. Look at the Nationals and the Rockies compared to us right now. I can't believe it. We have veterans who have paid too much and are under contract past this year, and the young players are not performing. I don't know how they fix this. Do they keep trying to spend their way out of it? This upcoming free agent class is pretty weak. I agree with you on not firing Stearns for the reasons you laid out. Plus, I don't think a good candidate would want this job, but at this point, I think he's underachieved as the team's head executive. I'd also like to see Steve Cohen press conference. I know you think this is unnecessary, but I need to really hear his true thoughts right now rather than his tweets. He needs to face the music. This is a new low for this organization, and there's no way around it. I don't think you'll hear from Cohen now. I think eventually he's going to talk. I think they'll do it when the time is right. I don't know what he can say other than is, look, I hired everybody thought was the best executive in the sport. I gave him the keys to the kingdom. What we've done hasn't worked. I agree with everything you said, Steve. I think it goes back to you have a combination of two things in this lineup. You took on projects like Luis Robert Jr. You were relying on young hitters who were iffy at best at times throughout their short big league career. And you added in veterans, core offensive players in Bichette and Polanco to make up for the loss of Nimmo and Alonso. And two of your core players are hurt. The young players haven't produced. The Luis Robert Jr. thing was iffy at best. Center field was a black hole last year. And you tried something. You tried to get a lottery ticket to a certain degree. And your positional core players are hurting out. And when they've been on the field, haven't performed. Unfortunately, it's pretty easy, Steve, to see what happened here. And it's unfathomable because a lot of bad luck, a lot has to go against you to be where you are. There's no way you could have predicted that, even the biggest ardent Mets hater. Sam wrote, I just saw your tweet about wanting to hire Alex Cora, and I want to reach out and strongly urge you to reconsider. Well, after my opening to the second half of the show, Sam is certainly going to want me to reconsider. In my opinion, bringing him in would be a mistake. He's significantly overrated in his reputation for being difficult to work with, which I believe would only lead to unnecessary drama. He has historically sought more power than most managers, resulting in the well-documented power struggles with both Chaim Bloom and Craig Breslow during his time with the Sox. I don't believe his management style would mesh well with Stearns at all. Furthermore, his behavior after being let go was incredibly petty. He's a distraction waiting to happen. I think he was putting up some stuff on Instagram, and that's what I think Sam was writing about. On a different note, I'm thrilled to see that Benj has finally raised his OPS above 500. We should throw a pizza party to celebrate. That's funny, Sam. In all seriousness, his success is vital for the long-term health of the franchise. I agree, and I got to tell you, Benj and Ewing are critically important. I put Ewing in that too, Sam. I was also really looking forward to Scott's season debut, but unfortunately quite a letdown. I'm honestly getting nervous about our young players. We desperately need them to perform well to succeed. No truer words have been said. At this point, I'm kind of putting aside Vientos and Beatty and Mauricio. I'm not counting on anything there. Benjamin Ewing and the young pitchers, if this goes in the same direction with a big chunk of those guys, you got a big problem here, guys. Then you have not a tiny rebuild. You might have a major rebuild. And Stearns will get fired. Stearns will get fired. He will, well, or he might even leave after year. You know, you're assuming after year five, he might just say, hey, I'm out of here. Not working. And it'll be very hard to get the next executive. Very hard. Very hard to sell it. You could be going into a very dark period of Mets history. This is a very, how they handle this year is critical. You cannot panic. You can't just start making trades to make trades. I think you got it. You have the cover. As far as Cora, I understand your point, Sam. I think that certainly he may not be a great fit for Stearns, but part of what Stearns, I said this in my comments, Stearns needs a cover. Stearns doesn't need an extension of him in the dugout. He needs somebody that could, maybe handle that media fan part because honestly, his logic, they feel he's condescending. I think that part of his Ivy League education, unfortunately, in this day and age, is looked at negatively by a big chunk of the fans. You know, there's a bit of a politics to that. I don't know if Stearns, because he's so corporate, so reserved, so methodical, so unemotional, which is what he's paid to be, I think he needs someone with a little bit of spit and vinegar. And I think when you have a manager who's respected by players and who's had some success, even if he comes with a little bit of that Bobby Valentine, you go for it. Hey, at the very least, it'd be entertaining. And we also don't know the politics of Boston if that played into some of what you brought up about not getting along with the front office. Look, Breslow's had his issues outside of Cora. He's had his issues. Maybe I'll try to find out some stuff about it. Andy wrote, Cora and the future of the team. First off, I want to strongly urge the Mets not to hire Cora. So two not to hire Coras here. While I see some fans pining for him, his abrasive and cocky personality is exactly what this franchise doesn't need. See, I thought that would be a good thing that could kind of spark some energy in there. It looks like so far we haven't heard that. Between his reported aspirations to be a GM and his history of passive-aggressive messages on social media, hiring him would create a mess and a headache that only would make matters worse. Please consider a different manager. Last week's episode was a real eye-opener regarding our struggles with player development. I agree with your assessment regarding a rebuild, but it also seems nearly impossible right now. Juan Soto would likely be unhappy with that direction, and we are currently stuck with several contracts that would provide little to no return. It's a very difficult position to be in. I think it's, but if you look at the payroll there, and Andy, it's only a couple of years. Your payroll's not bad post 2027. It's hard to believe that 1 month into the season, we're in the bottom third of almost every offensive category. While Lindor's injury is a significant blow, good teams find a way to stay competitive even with injuries. If they can't stay afloat, it suggests they weren't a good team to begin with. I agree with that. Given the expectations of 90 to 92 wins, continuing to play like this would make this one of the biggest disappointments in franchise history. I think Mets fans are losing it because while many other team owners across the league don't seem to care about their team, those team owners still have better records than the Mets. The Mets are still struggling despite having a committed owner and team president. Like many other diehard fans, I'm confused as to why they still struggle as a franchise, and I'm feeling less invested in the season than usual, which is incredibly frustrating. I hope this organization can figure this out quickly. Andy, this is, I have to tell you, perfect. You said it perfectly when I talked in the opening about fans giving up and giving away on the season. From a business perspective, what Andy writes, if you're losing Andy, it's a bad place to be on April. It's a bad place to be on April 27th. Real bad place to be. You know, it is. And I agree. I mean, everything that they've done since they hired Stearns is, you know, things that you want to do. You got the best executive. You're building up the farm system. You had that championship series to build upon. And you've given it all away. I mean, everything of all that good vibe from September, October of this year, of 2024, you gave it all away. I mean, to think that you're here after I left that ballpark last June when David Peterson had the complete game against the Nats, to think that we're here less than a year later, it's unfathomable. It really is. I can't believe it. But I think that that's why it's critical now. And I think you just have to ride this out. I know this sucks. There is hope. They have a number of top 100 prospects in that system. I think the pitching is going to be good. McClain was, I mean, it seems like after second time around the order, there might be some issues there. We'll dive deeper into McClain another time. But McClain looks like the real deal. I don't want to judge Scott off of one bad outing. Weminger is promising. You know, Zach Thornton's a guy, you know, we talked about this when we had our prospect chat with David, our friend David Mills, talking Mets contributor. Zach Thornton's an eye to look at. You know, we'll see what Santucci and Watson, and maybe there's others there. You know, maybe they could get some bullpen arms. Maybe Pintaro's a bullpen arm to keep an eye on. Lambert, Ross, if they're healthy. We'll see. So we just, here's the problem, guys. I know this is really, and this is where, and it's going to be hard for business for talking Mets because I am not as good as I can be if I don't have a passionate fan base on the other side. I mean, could you imagine mailbags the rest of the season? What are we going to talk about? I mean, and I'm going to tell you, the 86 thing ain't going to make it things better because I think the fans are tired of it. I feel bad for the Bobby V. Lee Mazzilli induction into the Mets Hall of Fame. And if Beltran, you know, Beltran's in September, they'll be long out of it. I don't know what kind of crowd you're going to get. You know, school back in session, football? I don't know. This is going to be, for me personally, might be one of the more challenging stretches of radio that I've done doing the Mets since I converted to talking Mets in 2016. We'll see. So anyway, that's it, guys. Appreciate you being a little patient. Came to you a little later on a Monday morning here. You know, feeling a little bit better, but, you know, one of the spring, you know, allergies, colds, nothing worse than that. But anyway, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Come join me at the new and improved talkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your day off Monday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.